Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are here with a late-breaking Alpha Flight recording. Yes, we're recording this the day it comes out, because this weekend was crazy, and last week was crazy. With Bun Bun updates, poor Nick was sick. So he got a one-way ticket to the emergency vet last week, but he's doing better now.
Yeah, and it was another one of those observe and wait and see, because he was, his behaviors were normal. He just had a upset tum-tum.
Yes.
And he is going to hate the bath that we're going to give him, which isn't really a bath. It's more of like a sponge bath.
Yes, but he's not going to like that.
Not one bit.
Asta has been having some spring fever that manifested itself in her digging in the couch. So,
yes, which is still way better than my couch.
Oh, yeah. Nora has destroyed your couch, because it's not spring fever with Nora. It is just fever.
Yes.
It's furniture fever. So, we're doing Alpha Flight 5 and 6, which are not really team books at all.
No, it's part of why I was, am currently so into it, is that it gives deep backstories / mini adventures for individual people within the team. And it can really, it's taking its time to really build them up so that when they come together as a team, you have a full sense of who everyone is and what they bring to the table.
Yeah. And issue 5 is all about Puck.
Yes, Puck, who had recently been disemboweled by a crazed Marina.
Yeah, I mean, Marina had some feelings. Maybe she had spring fever, too.
And that machinery that was making her revert to a more primal self.
And we open up with Puck in the hospital, and attending him is Dr. Michael Tuyungman.
Shaman himself.
Yes. And he's getting, like, the best treatment. Apparently, he is flirting with all of the nurses who are flirting back.
And yeah, there's a full panel.
They're fighting to, like, give him a sponge bath.
It's true. One of them just wants a six-pack of Judd's to take home with her.
Yes. And they're sort of wondering, like, why does he merit Dr. Tuyungman's attention? Because he's such a famous doctor.
Yes. The best doctor in Canada, in fact.
Yeah. So we get some background that Puck is having a lot of pain. So he's getting regular pain meds. And like I said, he's legit getting sponge baths multiple times a day from these very thirsty women.
Yes. One of them comes in and he's like, another one? You must think I'm the dirtiest person in the hospital.
And then we transition to that night where he's in pain and he uses the call button and no one answers after minutes. No one's answering.
Yeah, because when he's with Shaman and the nurses, like, he's hopped up on them. So he's talking and joking normally. Things are under control. And they're like, you're on the max dose. So he goes to investigate.
Yes. And he's like, no one's at the station. No one's in the hallway. I'll go into this med room. And we see a nurse, like, rolling down her sleeve, and she's holding an elastic in her hand, which can only mean one thing. She's a junkie.
And the syringe is right there, too.
Yeah. So she's like, and he's like, what are you doing? It's so quiet. Why are you being so secretive? She's like, it's night. It's supposed to be quiet.
Yeah. And she gets him, trundles him back to his room, gives him a mighty dose. But Puck can tell that something's up with her. Her hands are shaking. And he's like, oh, I'm glad that she's just sticking that into the IV and not into me.
Yeah, the IV that he had ripped out.
Yeah.
Which just gives me, like, the heebie-jeebies. No, thank you.
Oh. I've had that thought of when I'm donating platelets and there's a needle in each arm, how I would get out of that.
Oh, I don't even like that feeling of them being in.
Oh.
So he goes to investigate. He jumps on the, like, underneath a gurney so he can wander the hallways and get by.
And because he's been ruminating about this all night. And he's like, I've got to take action. Morning comes.
It sort of leads me to believe. So he goes to the med room and discovers that there's a difference in the liquids. Like, the color is different. One is diluted. I wonder if she gave him a diluted dose.
Maybe, because he was still in pain and he wasn't able to sleep.
Yep.
But we do need to note that to sneak around in the hospital, he hopped underneath a gurney with a dead person.
No, like, it's not dead. It's not dead. Look in the next panel next to the elevator. That person, like, their head and shoulders are exposed still.
Oh, the previous panels were feet first.
Yes. And I thought it was a dead person at first too. And I'm like, this is grim. But no, yeah. I think it's just someone going to surgery.
Okay.
Which makes me feel better.
So Puck goes back. He checks on the stashes of drugs and has noticed that all the stuff in the back has been cut. So there's a whole operation happening to siphon drugs away from the hospital.
Mm-hmm. He hears someone coming and he Puck jumps on top of a shelf.
Yeah, he does. And then on top of the door, and then sort of like swings around and down.
Which really hurts his stomach.
Yeah, he's acting like he's not held together by stitches.
And we learn that Dr. Tu Youngman / Shaman has used some of his magic to sort of accelerate some of that healing.
Yes, as much as he can. But still great pain, still held together by stitches, which I guess makes sense. Like, even with magic, how do you come back from being disemboweled?
Yeah. He goes to the chief administrator's office and is like, yo, something's going on. I can help you out. And the administrator's like, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I should inform the police, but maybe you can help, sort of thing.
Well, he does want to go to the police at
does
first.
He
does. He feels compelled, even.
Oh, there we go. Yes.
And then Puck is the one asking for 48 hours to catch the thieves and get the whole operation. So the doctor's like, okay, sure. Haven't had a superhero in the hospital before. And
so
Puck gets into his mystically repaired suit,
which helps hold his guts in.
Yes, it's tight enough to keep it all there. And I just love that Shaman can weave flesh back together and also fabrics.
He's very handy to have around.
Yeah. And Puck is like, jackpot, my first night out. There's this van. There's this like very obvious trail that they have been using. And one of the, I mean, it looks like he's on more than just what's in those bottles. It may be a meth. Menacing Nurse Daly and only giving her a day's worth of whatever.
Like pure drug.
Yes. And she's like, I thought you were going to give me a month worth. And he's like, nope. Okay, bye.
He's like, F you, junkie.
Yeah. So Puck speeds to the van, crawls up on the back, and half an hour later, they get to a boathouse. Like, that van has seen better days.
Yeah, it has. So has the boathouse. And you can see there are tons of boxes with, like, the medical cross on them. So it's a whole drug ring that's going on. Our methy driver gets out and meets with another scuzzy-looking guy.
Yep. I would not want care to guess when the last time he washed his hair was.
No. But then Puck is spotted on top of the van and he starts just wailing on these guys.
Oh yeah. He jumps off the van, lands on this dude's head and like rides it all the way to the ground. And then the other one tries to hit him with a stick, a harpoon. It's got a hook apparatus on the end. But Puck dodges, jumps off the van, and drop kicks the dude right in the face, which he should not have done.
No, he rips some stitches out. It's real bad. He can feel like things might be leaking out.
Yes. He tries to get to a very old-style phone on the side of the wall, hoping it can still work.
And he, like, there's a blood trail behind him.
Yeah. He climbs on top of the box, reaches for the phone, and it all goes dark. And then the cool thing with the art is, like, it's black splatters as he loses consciousness. And when he's coming to, there's a panel of all black, and then one in pastel colors next to one with this basically the same image, but a broader shot and more vibrant colors. And the text goes from like wavy Mr. Judd to the normal text box text.
And it's the senior administrator of the hospital, along with a police detective
there. Yeah. And I had forgotten the plot line when I read this. I needed to refresh myself. So I hadn't realized that it was the administrator that was acting sort of fishy. And I didn't know how he called for help. Like, who picked him up? How did they know? Where did they know? All those things.
Yeah, like, there's a big gap there.
Yes, a plot hole, if you will.
Yes. Oh, and Asta has jumped up. She can't verbalize, but she is just at the mic for everyone.
Oh, dear listener, you have been blessed by Asta's presence.
At least she hasn't deleted this episode yet.
It's true. The only sounds from here are Nick's munching sounds in the far box. So Sergeant's like, great, we have it all wrapped up. It's all in a nice little bow. I hope you recover soon. And heads out with the administrator, who's like, wow, we did everything we can. It's amazing how well Puck is doing, but he's probably not going to last the night. Like, he's planting a seed.
Yeah, he is. And he then returns to Puck's room and he's like, oh, you're so lucky to still be with us, Mr. Judd.
Let me give you a sedative.
Yeah. And Puck is like, something's real off. I'm connecting things in my head right now.
Right. Nurse Daly is not the mastermind behind this drug ring, and neither are those two flunkies. We get a interesting panel. It is a close-up of the needle going into the medication jar with a corner of the label peeling up.
Mm.
And he just decks the administrator across the face. And he's like, oh, you made this too easy. Like, you are clearly the ringleader. And he undoes the fake label off the medication, and it's insulin, which would have killed Puck. And it would not have shown up on an autopsy unless you were specifically looking for concentrations of something that already is in the body.
And John Byrne coming in with, like, how to murder someone in this comic.
A little bit, yeah. But yeah,
that's the main story in the book.
That's the whole end. It's a little abrupt. Like, it would have been nice to see the administrator taken away in chains or whatever, but
yeah,
that's okay.
But don't worry, everyone, because we have not seen the last of Dr. Two Youngman. As we get a backup story that begins his origin.
It's true. There's a sort of a vigil. He's there with basically the North Star haircut. And his aged grandfather and his aunt who are there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm a doctor. I'm not going to listen to you talk about the old ways. I'm going to go off and be the best doctor in Canada. The best surgeon, in fact, I'm not going to give that up for this, whatever this is. And he's off.
Yeah, he's like, bye, see you later.
And his aunt is like, I cannot believe he did that. And the grandfather's like, it's the white man has gotten to him, basically. Like, the assimilation of the Borg. Which is
so
sort
he
of...
he goes back to suburbia, where he lives.
And guess who's his next door neighbor?
It's the McDonald's.
It's Heather.
Yeah. It's the whole McDonald clan that has like a bazillion kids.
Are they competing with the Guthries?
Yeah, I guess. The Canadian Guthries, the McDonald's.
Yes. He gets filled in that mom's gone to have another baby. She says it's the last one, but she said that last time. And a doctor called and goes to the hospital. Shaman's wife is there, and it is not good. It is not a good diagnosis. The prognosis is...
Oh, yeah. She has terminal cancer.
Yes.
So he's like, you know what? I can fix this. And Elizabeth, my young daughter, I promise you, I will save your mother.
Yeah. And he obsesses over finding a cure to the exclusion of everything.
Yeah. Including his daughter.
Yes.
Like, he basically is like, hey, Heather, you 12-year-old, you just be the new mom for her, okay? Like, you babysit her 24/7.
I mean, I do like her stuffed animal.
Yeah. It's fun. It's like a Tootsie Pop owl.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, Shaman makes the promise that he's going to heal his wife / Elizabeth's mother. But as we find out after the James Bond ad, he does not. And Elizabeth freaks out, like, don't touch me, liar, liar. I hate him. I hate him.
Heather and her family are there to comfort Elizabeth. And that's basically it. Like, Michael Tu Youngman's life is shattered.
Yeah, his wife just died. His daughter can't stand to be around him. And Heather's dad, Ramsey, is like, didn't I just read that your grandfather also died today?
Ooh.
Yeah, and that's how it ends. Like, there's a ad for Star Frontiers and Defenders with a angel in his favorite suit of mine.
It's the McNeils is the family.
Okay. Claire and Ramsey McNeil.
There we go. McDonald McNeil, it's a lot. They're a lot of Macs.
There are too many.
A lot of Scottish ancestry in Canada. So what we see seated here in issue 5 is going to have ramifications for basically the rest of the series.
Shaman's origin?
Yeah, like this drama you're seeing on the last page will continue to reverberate.
Oh, that's fun.
I'll leave it at that, but this does not go away, ever.
Dear listener, Nick and Nora are snuggled up next to each other.
Oh, good.
Yes, even though Nick was being a dick.
Sometimes she just gives in because she just wants affection.
Yeah, and then sometimes she mounts him and fucks the shit out of his head.
Yeah, he
and then runs away.
He doesn't like that.
She also punches him in the face when he gets overeager for a treat.
Yes. So it's a real give and take relationship. I would say if it were human, it would be toxic. But bunnies have different social structures.
It's true. And they're petty. Like, I will groom Frank and Buddy, but I will not groom you.
Oh, yes, Frankie. And that's like 75 cents I ever spent on a stuffed animal for the rabbits ever.
Yeah. Once you cut out the plastic bolts out of his head.
Yes. He cannot be resuscitated. No. So issue 6 is Snowblind. And This is a front runner for, I think, your favorite issue of all that you have read so far.
Yes, I am just intrigued by Snowbird in general. I think she's mysterious. I love some mystic nonsense. And I love that she has agency, and like, she is super strong, and can fly and can shapeshift, and it's just very neat.
So if people are unaware at this point, this is a Snowbird story that we're getting in the main feature. So this is where we see her at her
her day job.
The remote Royal Canadian Mounted Police post, the district of Mackenzie in the Northwest Territories. Again, a Mac name.
Oh, so she's getting scolded, read the riot act even, by this new dude who has blustered in, who does not care for any sort of past arrangements. And he wants to know where this Anne Mackenzie has been. Like, why does she just disappear? What's happening? So this is Snowbird in her human masquerade form.
Wait, is her last name Mackenzie?
Yes.
So she's in the district of Mackenzie with the last name of Mackenzie.
Yep.
Wow, John Byrne. Just... he differentiates the characters, but not the last names of anyone.
Yeah, she...
So many. Okay, so...
She's a corporal.
She is. This chief inspector is like... He's very Darth Vader. He's like, okay, Princess Leia, you're not going to tell me what I want? Take her away. Throw her...
She's confined until you prepare a report with her entire service history since she's been here.
And... For real? Like, I thought confined to quarters, because we've seen that on Star Trek.
She's like full on brig.
It is like Old West jail brig.
Yeah.
That she's escorted to. And
with a little cot.
Then we get a cutaway 40 miles north to an oil field. And this crew is like, hey, did we strike something? Is this oil? Is this the big thing? And there's a big gush, and it's all neon. It's like blue and
it should never be neon. That fun fact, if you're ever drilling and something comes up that's that shade of green, run away.
It might just be Kolomak. Kolomak is free after 1,000 years. He is one of the great beasts.
He was imprisoned in the earth. All the stuff has shattered around the oil rig, and then it all sort of gets sucked into a great big ball, and then from that forms Kolomak.
40 miles away, Anne Mackenzie, in the district of Mackenzie, on her cot, feels a disturbance in the natural forces.
You know what's ridiculous? It's the territory of Mackenzie, M-A-C. But she is Mackenzie, M-C-K.
Oh.
That is how the differentiation is made.
Oh. So anyway, she senses that a mystic field has been breached, and she like transforms at the drop of a hat into Snowbird and Kool-Aid mans her way out of that wall.
Yeah,
and flies away.
Several miles. In the meantime, the dude is trying to be nice, and he brought her extra blankets because that mattress looked real thin on that cot.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh no, there's just a hole in the wall. We got a brief interlude with Guardian, who's, you know, just out for some flight, like you do. He's trying really hard to relax. So he got all suited up and went flying.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Good for him.
And then he's going so fast, he like zooms into the window, and there's no chance anyone could have seen him.
It's like, dude, just use a door. Like, although I still love their living room, like that wall of plants in front of the window, like they're all in their little macrame hangers.
Yeah.
Just living their best plant lives.
They have a cozy little fireplace.
They do, and those ridiculous chairs with the loopy things.
Yeah.
He gets a letter from Roxxon Oil Company. And he's like, how'd they even get my address? And great Scott, with the little vibrations on the side of his head to show how shaken he is.
And this is where I insert the gif of Whoopi Goldberg going, you in danger, girl. Like, ooh, this is going to bite you in the ass in a few issues. So we get back, and Snowbird is on the scene with Kolomak.
And she's like, slow your roll. And he's like, a flying mortal. I must have been asleep longer than I thought.
And he thinks that we have evolved.
Which, good for him, if only. But then instead,
he realizes, what?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Snowbird is like, your foe is the land, Beast Tundra, and he has already fallen. You have other enemies. Look at my true form. And there's this interesting panel. It's like a half her face is the normal image, and the other half is all purple and dark and swirly, and there's like a purple glowing eye. Which, good for her. Do we get that back? Like, does she run around like this at some point?
No, she really doesn't.
Opportunity wasted.
So then he's like, oh no, you have the spirit of Hodiak. Nodiak?
I think it's Hodiak.
I think it's Hodiak. Text. This lettering is real muddy on the page.
Yeah, but the power of Nelvana.
Yes. But in this mortal form, and she's like,
oh, I forgot that detail. Okay.
Yeah.
And I love these pages. It's sort of ridiculous, but they are blank panels because Kolomak has the power of the elements, and he conjures a snowblind blizzard. The snow is whirling so fast, so much, you can't see anything, and all that storm is centered on him. So we just get these yellow narration boxes and some thought bubbles from Snowbird. Kolomak's speech is circled in blue, so it's very clear who's speaking, even though you can't see who physically is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, he's super powerful. I sort of forgot about this storm thing, but he's vulnerable. He has a physical form and can be attacked directly. And she transforms into a bear, and we get this big ol' roar.
The onomatopoeias happening throughout these pages are just great because it gives you the picture of the battle without you actually seeing the battle.
Right? The ancient monster has barely time for a startled cry before 1,000 pounds of tooth and claw slams into him. You get some crack, you got a crash.
And then they're tumbling through the air.
Yeah. Until there's nothing underneath her. And then a shriek. And here we get a power-up, sort of, for Snowbird. She transforms directly from bear to owl, which she has never done before.
No, she usually has to return to her human form before turning into a different animal.
She references how handy it would be to be a bat for the sonar location purposes. And I'm pretty sure Canada does have bats, but they might not have known this when this was written.
No, like a bat that is specifically only in Canada?
It has to be specific to Canada?
I think, or it has to be like, that's where it's originally from.
Dear listener, Daryl will take over for a brief interlude while I keep Nick from eating some plastic.
Oh, there we go. She, as the owl, is trying to regain control of herself, and it's a struggle. So she is really, really putting a lot of energy into it, and she just turns herself into Snowbird. Who collapses at the cliff edge. And she's like, what? He's still alive. Oh, the storm is centering on him. And if he weren't still alive, it would have vanished. So then she's like, okay, I need to double down on this. And I need to do more to defeat him. Like, it took all of Alpha Flight to defeat Tundra, who was one of the seven great beasts. but it's just me right now. So she sort of thinks about, well, how was he trapped before? And they're going back and forth, and she finds him. The ice is trying to get to her. She starts bleeding, and she's never been lacerated like that before. So,
whist is the onomatopoeia.
Yes. And she cuts through the storm, and she basically raises up a ton of earth and buries him.
Yeah, she sort of taunts him into running basically into the cliff. And with that impact and the tearing, shattering might of a million winters rips out, smashing into Snowbird and the cliff face alike. And she calls out, "Hodiak, grandfather, grant me the strength to bear this until the gigantic, the biggest rumble onomatopoeia." It's across the top of both pages. And towering above them, the cliff face slips as Colimax storm rips across its base. And then we start to get images again. This to show the snowstorm is subsiding because it's being buried under the earth. No. And it worked. We got images back. We got color back. The great beast has been buried beneath the earth like he was before by his enemy Tundra. And, oh, by the way, the oil worker survived.
Yes, and she's like, you know what? What I just did, not going to cut it. Pour concrete over it.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need to peace out. And it seems like these great beasts, she's thinking to herself as she flies away, are coming up more often. But once all of them are defeated, then Snowbird's time on Earth will be done.
Well, it's more along the lines of, if the ancient barriers grow weaker by the day, soon perhaps my kinsmen will also be free.
Mm.
And then her time would be done. So I feel that means that Hodiak and Elvana will go back to protecting everyone and she won't have to.
Mm.
That's how I read it, at least.
Yeah.
So that was the main story, and we get the next phase of Michael Two Youngmen's journey.
It is a decade later. He is outside of Banff, Alberta, living in a very simple cabin.
Yes. It's weird. Some of the language, it was like this virgin land untouched by the hand of man. And it's one of those things, like one of those tropes of totally erasing the fact that there were people living on this continent for thousands of years before Europeans showed up.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So he
was having a sad boy moment out in the snow.
A sad boy decade.
Yeah. And he comes back and he's like, maybe it's time for me to open this bag that was given to me a decade ago.
Yeah.
That's it. That's just sitting here on this table as my only possession. I haven't bothered to open it.
Yeah. Although the instructions were, you must not open the bag, not until you know it is time. And apparently a decade later is when that time showed up.
So he opens it and out springs the spirit of his grandfather. And his grandfather is like, all right, time to go to school.
He's looking good.
He is.
And
Grandpa has been lifting in the afterlife.
I feel like it's sort of like a him in his prime image, which will be sort of important later. And Michael's like, no, I have gone mad. It's all I spent too much time alone in the wilderness. And he looks and the package is actually his grandfather's skull. With the same adornments around his head. Well, his skull at this point.
Yeah.
And a bag underneath.
And his grandfather is like, place my skull to one side and take up the medicine bag. Now pull pine needles out of it. And Michael is like, what? Like, oh, okay, sure, old man. And reaches his hand in and it comes up empty. And
he's like, goes I don't to like, this
look
is...
in there. And his grandfather is like, never look in the bag.
Yeah. But he's still like, this has gone on far enough. I don't know if this is madness or some cruel joke. But the ghost is like, now put aside your doubts and let's get to work. And we get some bathing in spring streams. We get some running through the woods. We get
loincloths.
Michael looking real good. Yeah, that's a thing. And now the image of the grandfather is more aged. So, and there's a reference as well to, I've taught you everything I know. There's still more, but it's up to you to learn it.
And basically
you'll figure it out on your own. Okay, bye.
And the final test is like reaching in and getting those pine needles, and he does it.
He does. Let them feel as real to you as the fabric of the bag against your left hand. Let them be real. And there they are. And then we get a fun, like, the Ancient One and Doctor Strange creeping in.
Yeah, from the Sanctum Sanctorum / a portal that the Ancient One is on.
It's this original Zoom call.
It really is. And Doctor Strange is like, interesting development. We have a great shaman appearing.
Perhaps the greatest his people have ever known.
And then we're teased with the next issue that we're getting some Snowbird action.
The origin of Snowbird.
Yeah, so that'll be the backup story starting next issue.
Yeah. So that was one of my favorite issues for the Snowbird battle against Kolomak. She took down a whole great beast on her own.
She did. And again, this issue is seeding so many things that will be a thing later on in the series.
Yeah. Important Bun Bun update. Nora is inside the house in a box eating hay. Nick is outside the house next to her eating that same hay.
Oh.
Heaven forbid Nora have her own food that he does not have access to.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is, but it's good because he needs to eat hay because he was trying to eat foam earlier.
Oh, well, that's not nutritious at all.
Especially for a bun who just had a bout with diarrhea.
Yes. So that's it. We're halfway through the introduction of Alpha Flight, the first 12 issues.
Yes.
That we have earmarked as probably the most pivotal. And I, having read all of Volume 1, really agree there's such foundational stories that we need to cover slowly.
Yes. And I feel like Puck gets overlooked, and to some extent Snowbird. I feel like the main focus is usually on Mac and Heather and North Star, maybe even some Sasquatch. And like giving Puck and Snowbird their solo time is great.
Yeah. Well, coming up in the next two issues, we will get North Star and Aurora.
It's true. I think it's one of the issues that I looked for, and thank you for your help in identifying which one it was exactly.
Yeah, it's another of your favorite issues. And where have you read up through? Isn't it somewhere in the teens?
It is the teens. So okay. This will all be new to me pretty soon, dear listener.
Yes. You haven't even gotten to issue 20, the issue I had signed by Keith Williams and Rick Parker at C2E2.
Yeah, I have not.
That issue is camp.
Oh, good.
When we get to it. So yeah, Alpha Flight, we're continuing on our journey. And then once we get past the first 12, as everyone knows, we're going to speed it up. And yes. Take a few issues each episode. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
It is. I'm glad it's in our rotation. And hopefully, dear listener, you are too.
Yeah. So if you have thoughts about Puck, Snowbird, methy drug dealers in the 80s.
Do you feel like I'm giving Puck and Snowbird short shrift and they are more headliners than not?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on these two characters? All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and sticking around for the Bun Bun updates in between everything, too.
Yes.
And we will catch you next week with a brand new episode. And until then, go rate us on like iTunes or something. Like, give us a high rating. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure. Do that. It'll help others find our podcast, too. Our audience has been growing, and a crucial part of that is word of mouth and ratings, sadly. So if you go click and rate us any of the stars, hopefully 5, other folks can find us too.
Yes.
All right, everyone. See you later.
Take care. Be safe.
Bye.
Bye.